Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome to Big Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, rookie on the board. We have S&P futures, which were up last night, and had a huge, yet another insider information sort of a spike right on the close last night, which I'll tell you about in a second. We get the stock markets. I'm looking at NCAA. If we're going to talk some NCAA with Kevin, so far his Arizona team looking pretty good. The S&P futures now are down. Let's see. We're slipping. I'll get that in a second. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, bud?
Oh, coffee's hot and I'm awake, so what more do I need?
Well, there you go. You're not the games in Chicago are tonight, right? The what regional are we? Midwest or West or something?
That's a good question.
SP futures down 26, Nasdaq futures down 145. They were up last night. Oil's up 255, 97.03. And interest rates are up another five ticks. None of that's really good news, but yeah, they must have must be playing here tonight in Chicago.
Yeah, it's the Midwest.
All right, so it looks to me like your team might be going to do it, eh? The Arizona guys, they look pretty good.
They got work to do.
I thought Texas might knock off Purdue, but I didn't really want to see that happen since our girl Larissa is such a Purdue fan. So,
well,
but Texas,
you know,
did pretty good.
I am sure the last words from the Texas coach when he sent him out for that last play with about 12 seconds left to go was, if they miss, be sure to box out.
And he didn't do that? They didn't do that.
They missed, and Purdue got the tip in and won the game. Now, it looks like the guy that got the tip in gave the man who was trying to box out a little bit of a shove before he went up. So that matters, although where they were positioned, you know, you just don't stand under the basket and box guys out. You know, it's not going to work.
No, well, Purdue's pretty big, right? They're, I think the officiating.
Yeah, their center, their big man had was fouled out, so he wasn't in the game at that point.
What's the Texas
got the tip.
Well, what's the Texas story? They were a play in 11th. Did they have injuries early in the year or something? Because they sure looked like they were the equal to just about any team they played.
I think they were considered an underachiever at that point.
Yeah, because they got that one big tall kid that everybody thinks is going to be terrific, right? What's his name? The big long name, like the guy in the Bulls?
Oh, Volkaitis?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a skin disease or something, doesn't it?
Well, it's very Lithuanian.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, is he Lithuanian or is he Ukrainian?
I don't know. It sounds more Lithuanian. It doesn't mean he can't be from the Ukraine, but it sounds like more of a Lithuanian name, but I don't know that. So tonight we have, I think St. John's got a pretty chance of beating Duke. What do you think?
They got a puncher's chance. I think Duke's probably got the better game. If look, Duke hasn't played well yet in the tournament, and they may very well come out and say, okay, it's time for us to get serious here.
Well, how much do they miss the one guy who's out? Is he the point guard or something?
I don't know, because their best player is Cameron Boozer.
Yeah, you can't help but to see him on every commercial. But
the Boozer brothers are everywhere.
You know what? He does a pretty good job, though. I'm not saying anything bad. I mean, they're doing a pretty good job.
Bannon,
one of them too. We got Alabama against Michigan. Joel will be praying a rosary on that one. And we've got Tennessee, Ohio, Iowa State. Michigan State, UConn's gonna be a good game.
Yeah, I think so. I think that one will be that'll be worth seeing.
What we talk about this from time to time. We got all kinds of market stuff to talk about today. So, What do you? I think it's more curiosity, Kevin, than I really care, because it's their business and I guess they can do whatever they want. I'm getting memories are fading. It wasn't the traditional early game the night before ever Major League Baseball all started. Wasn't that a Cincinnati game, and wasn't it always on national TV someplace?
Cincinnati used to get the opening game all the time. They don't anymore.
But then it was always... I don't get why that game was on Netflix.
I mean, Netflix paid them a lot of money to get the game.
Well, yeah. All right. Walk me through the... I stopped up to meet my attorney buddies at Tripoli. They didn't have it. I didn't have it. The bar downstairs didn't have it. Did the Yankees meet whatever their cable package, the Giants cable package? Could they play it? How do you take the opening?
I was wondering about that myself. Whether the local teams managed to get coverage of that. I've been otherwise tied up, so I didn't have any time to look into it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not like you and I going to spend half our day digging into it. It's just kind of curious how the economics ever work. That if you cut your audience, I'll say at least by half, or if the local teams don't have it, not only that, you leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth. What is the economic advantage of that? How can they pay more than the next guy? I don't understand that.
Well, they're charging subscriptions, okay, for the service, and the NBC, for instance, who was covering games yesterday, because they now have Major League Baseball, and they had games on national TV. NBC is not charging people for their services. They're relying on advertising.
But Netflix doesn't charge extra.
It's an altogether different business model.
Well, it's not really, because I'm sure there were commercials during the game. And Netflix didn't charge you. They don't charge you extra for just that game, do they?
No, and they may think that they're attracting people just for that game, but I doubt that they're getting much of that. But what they probably do get, because they have some Major League Baseball games, is they probably get some incremental subscriptions from sports junkies who want to get MLB games when they're on there.
Well, I just
and it may help make the case. I'm not a Netflix user. My daughter is, so we can ask her what the advantages of being on Netflix are. But
well, they just raised all their rates. That's one of the headlines today. Everybody's raising their rates on everything, Kevin. This inflation is getting it's predicted by Snacks and Jacks, but it doesn't mean like I want to see it happen. But it's all over the place. I don't know what we're doing here, and it's not just oil. It's everything. Everybody's taking advantage of it. I don't know if it's tariffs. I don't know if it's money supply. I don't know what it is, but something
well,
causes.
It's a lot of things. But for instance, talking to my son, who's in charge of logistics for Sprouts Markets, he had to go, to their management team, to their and the board, and tell them what to expect with the oil price surge. And how long to expect it, and it's millions and millions of dollars on their cost side. Now, how much can they raise their prices in response to that? Maybe some to offset it, but they're never going to recover all of it. And that's the same thing we've seen the last couple of years. That there were a lot of people who've had to either back off. Fast food is an example where they had to either back off on some of their pricing or create all these new lower price menus that are separate, and hoping that a lot of people are still going to come in and order their favorite hamburger and their favorite sandwich of whatever kind, and so you'll still get a drive-through for two that costs $30, but they figured out real quickly that their sales were dropping off because there's a whole lot of customers that don't see the value to paying more for it and have no sympathy for saying, sorry, your increasing costs are your problem, not mine. So they just stopped going, and the fast food places saw a big drop off in volumes. and they may be able to show the revenue with the rising prices, but when you start seeing people not showing up at your stores, that's a problem. That's a big problem, because that's not a trend you can sustain.
Well, it also, I mean, the some consumers, not some, because I don't know the restaurant business that well either, so I'll include myself in that. Some ignorant consumers sort of don't get where the profit really is. I mean, you can put a lost leader on your dollar and a half hamburger, but as long as the Coke is still $2.50, that's where the money is. I mean, it's in the drinks. It's not in the.
Yeah. Well, sure, but most of their lost leaders are value meals, so yeah. That will include the Coke.
Well,
but you're right. That's a huge markup. And no matter how you look at it, soft drinks are a huge markup for them.
I mean, even the Dunkin' Donuts, when I get stuff for when my workers come over, you go over and it's you can get sometimes they have a special on like a couple of the breakfast wraps or something to them for like $5 or $4, which takes somebody, two or three minutes to make minimum, maybe more. Yet the coffee's 4 1/4 and it takes somebody 2 seconds to pour it. And what does the coffee cost? 50 cents? I mean, the markup is dramatically different.
Not even for a cup of coffee. So even if you go back and look at the price from 5 years ago, Tom, that was worth it to you, and the markup on it was utterly huge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you have when you're doing it for other people, that's what you're going to do.
Even at a buck and a quarter, you're saying, well, that has value to me. I'll happily pay a buck and a quarter for a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and you may very well feel that way, but when it goes up to $4, how often are you going to buy it? When it goes up to $3, how often are you going to buy it? So you're just playing elasticity games, but most people they'll determine. Whether they think through it as in a really structured way or not, they know what is worth it and what they're willing to pay. And when a price gets higher than they're willing to pay, they just don't buy.
Well, that's the truth. But
for those stupid ass drinks that they serve at Starbucks that have always been obnoxiously priced.
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with your station in life, wherever you happen to be in a given day. When I say that, are you single? Are you married? Are you out? Are you out and about? Are you not? I mean, on Sunday morning, I get up early and dash off to the store where animals and creatures are asleep, and I get my coffee at the Myers, which you fill it up yourself, and it just went up to $2.40, so for 24 ounces. So I'm not going to complain about that. Plus, I like the guy in there, but now the Dunkin' Donuts is $4 and out there in Homer Glen. If I'm out by myself, I'll get it. But if it's a day when Audrey gets up as well, she's going to make a pot of coffee. I'm not going to go out and buy two of them for $9 when she's got the pot right there. But if it's yourself, a lot of it is convenience. But if you're up and going, you ever watch see on LaGrange Road, all the McDonald's. One day I had to go out and had something with my truck because I'm driving way out on LaGrange Road. I couldn't find a McDonald's or anything on the right side of the road. And I'm thinking, boy, I must be such a dummy. I don't realize that all the, and even and there's one on 83 where there was a McDonald's on, if you're going south, the southbound side. And it was a pretty nice place. And all of a sudden they tear it down and put one on the northbound side. And all of a sudden it dawns on my dumb ass that, wait a minute, they must make all their money on selling coffee and something to somebody heading to the expressway in the morning. So you've got to be on the side where people are going to the city in the morning, where the crew going home just wants to get home. They're not piling in there for a Coke or something. So obviously the money is in the coffee in the morning. And you got to be on the convenience side of the road because people aren't going to take the 5 minutes it takes to make the U-turn or whatever to get over to the other side to make another U-turn to get back. It's worth changing the place just for that. So it's really more all people are willing to pay for convenience, even though they know they're getting ripped off. Basically, I guess that's a big part of it, right? I mean, it always has been.
Yeah, But I'll tell you, if I had to pay $4 for a cup of coffee in the morning because I was on my way out the door, I would take a couple minutes to make a cup of coffee, put it into my travel mug, and because those newfangled cup holder thingies in the car work really, really well, yeah, and then yeah. I have coffee while I'm driving.
Well, plus you can get those ones with a little...
That 3 minutes it takes to make the coffee is worth the $4 to me.
Oh, yeah.
Partially because of the, if you do the calculation of what my time is worth, but also because of the principle of it. I'm just not letting anybody charge me that for coffee.
Well, one of those little, but those little coffee cups, those things, they're not cheap, are they? The ones where you put the one cupper in there?
Well, yeah, but, the Keurigs, no, I don't use one of those either. I use a regular coffee pot and just make enough to fit into my... Because the Keurigs are not a good proposition either. They're not a good financial proposition either. And it is no more difficult to dump a little coffee into the basket and make two cups. Make a two-cup helping of it of water. I think Keurigs are one of the great scams of all time.
Well, it's all in the pan. That's the one thing you, if you shop at like Costco or Sam's, what you learn, and obviously a lot of people think it's a lot cheaper. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But what's obvious to most is that it's all in the packaging and it's all in the just delivery and a lot of products. So if you can sell somebody twice as much in a bigger container, which could be a lifetime thing if you live by yourself, it's nowhere near twice as expensive. But the problem is if you're a single person and you shop at Costco, you better have like a room for all the stuff, right?
I have a Costco membership. The gas pays for the membership, and occasionally I will buy something like the winter coat I bought last fall, which was incredible price. It was $26, which was great because it's been a really good coat all winter. And I will find a few things that I will buy there. I know people like to get the roasted chickens. That those are a good price. So, but I never stop and run into there because it's kind of a zoo to run in there. If I had a large family, Costco would be great. And if I had a large family and a lot of places to put stuff, but in my little house, I'm not getting there.
So it's going to take you a while to go through like 40 rolls?
With my daughter living there to keep her under control from buying too much crap that we hardly ever get to.
Well, you don't need the 40 rolls of TP?
No.
You get to the point, what am I going to do with this stuff?
Not. Which reminds me, though, I should put in an order for some to have delivered.
Oh, God.
It's really hard to find... anything but jumbo, and the jumbo rolls don't work in my roller in my bathroom. so it just won't spin for a while. So I have to go search online to find them.
Well, Kevin, I get back to this some of this inflation talk. I mean, I was going through the, and I think our listeners are certainly smart enough and pay attention enough to expand on the stuff that really both of us say. I mean, we talk about inflation and where it's starting to hit people, and also, but now when you flip over to the stuff I was talking about with Social Security and Medicare, and how everybody who's on Social Security, who pays the Medicare Part B and pays for a supplemental, is netting less than they did last year, and yet you and I have talked now for 20 minutes about inflation all over the place, and I have to believe that there's some percentage of society, 15-20%, maybe not that high, that's how they live, is on Social Security. Now they might have something in the bank, but basically they're living on Social Security. So you're also saying that this particular group is part of the CPI bullshit with this 6.5% of the basket is medical, and I'm going to say right out of the gate, it's got to be 20%, 25% of their basket, and that's just the insurance costs, not any kind of prescription drugs or anything they're having to pay for. So they're not only is their net income down from last year, it's also the percentage of the basket that people lie to you at 6.5 might be pushing 25, 30, 35, maybe even 40 if they have an expensive prescription drug for those people. So the stuff we talk about, all of us, even though we argue about a lot of stuff, it's compounding on people. It's not just a little bit here and a little bit there. It starts to compound to the point where people are going, what the bleep? I mean, and it's not, I have no love lost at all for this current administration, but I also know that it's been 25 years in the making. So every president has not seen it coming. And now maybe, I hope not, I hope we might be at the, an end of the rope here with these interest rates going up every day. I can't even imagine what this country looks like with this kind of debt if we go anywhere near the 8 or 9% long-term rates. And Kevin, I don't see how we don't get there. I mean, I honestly don't. I mean, I hope somebody comes up with a solution somewhere, but I don't see how we don't get there. And if we do, I don't know what this market's going to look like. I don't know what these housing prices are going to look like. And boy, it doesn't look like anybody's getting a raise. And that's why you have to be careful of this stuff and not let it get started. Because once it gets started, there's kind of a momentum on its own to it. I mean, I don't know, every place you go, everything is up, up, up. And I don't see, and everything is sticky. I mean, eggs went to $4 a dozen, and the omelets went from, $12 to $15. And these are not in hotel places. These are regular kind of joints. And now all of a sudden, the eggs are back down to $1.69. Those omelets aren't coming down. I mean, it's crazy. And, I mean, the transportation costs, the cost of diesel, through a lot of, we're exporting diesel, we're doing this. I mean, you would think that we would not be affected as much since we now are essentially energy independent. Well, not exactly, because some of the stuff is products, and the products don't all match up. And I mean, it's more complicated than me saying that. But by and large, we're 21 million barrels a day we use, and 21 million barrels a day of something we create. So we're sort of in that loop where it's not like the embargo of 1973 or whatever, or even when Bush had the problem with 9/11. I mean, but then we were producing 40-50% of our stuff, and now we're 100, and yet the prices are up just as much now as they were back then, and it's kind of unfathomable, really. I can't explain it, but you would think it wouldn't be as bad as it is. And then you have the amount of taxes and sales taxes and everything that pile on top of that. And maybe other than the guy in Indiana, nobody's backing off on that, are they? I mean, look at the Boone. I mean, Illinois used to make, what are they, 10% on their taxes? Well, they're not, but the total's like 10%. So when gas was, $3 a barrel, they're making 30, or $3 a gallon, they're making 30 cents. Well, now they're making 40. You don't see them kicking the dime back to you, do you? I mean, they're saying yes. So it's the people who benefit by this, I've been talking about for 20 years. These are the people that benefit by it. They don't want to stop it. What makes you think that the government wants, they don't want it to the point where it costs them votes. They don't want it to the point where they're being bitched at about it. But they don't mind inflation. It's the best thing in the world for them. We used to have a population that understood that, and now we seem like we're clueless. How could that possibly be? But it is. It's been that way forever. Where am I right?
Because we also have the government in control of so much of the educational system. And, I believe it's absolutely intentional of what we do and don't teach as we bring people through the system.
I was on Joel's show yesterday, and Joel always wants to stick me to the markets, right? Which is fine. But his partner, Joel wasn't there yesterday, so his partner goes, Joel is always hogging you. I want to talk. I know you know something about economics. What's going on with this economics and all this kind of stuff? And I walked him through how, money works and how it worked in the Civil War, and how when you lose control of your money, it's almost as dangerous as losing control of your military. And he goes, I didn't know you were an economic wonk. He goes, keep going. This is what we're going to talk about, but I love it, and the phones lighten up. Everybody loves it. I mean, I said, this is what people used to do on a daily basis when they talk about money supply, and that's why your OEX, you had to put your intent to exercise in before the money supply came out, because this was big stuff. And now everybody says, oh, no, don't pay attention to it. I said, they're crazy. They're absolutely crazy. I mean, and yet we have, several Biden wanted no part of money supply. He didn't think it had anything to do with anything. He appointed the lady who wrote the new monetary policy, don't worry about it, to his Council of Economic Advisors. This guy, I don't think he knows what it is, but clearly he just wants to print more and more and more. So we've had two people in a row that seemingly have no knowledge or care of what they're doing to the place. And one of them's Democrat, one's Republican. It just, I don't know where they got their degree, from Kmart or what? I don't know. It's not, nobody knows that. You can listen all day long and nobody will mention the huge spike in M2 in February. It was before the war that Hal and I talked about yesterday for an hour. Nobody's even mentioned it, Kevin, on TV. In 1982, that would have been news on every, it would have been headline in the Wall Street Journal. And now people wonder where this inflation's coming from. It's not coming from oil. That's a jolt, but the general inflation level is always, it's the amount of money. And I know, but you say that and it's like, I don't know, it's like talking to a wall. Nobody has any idea what you're talking about. Where this was number one headline back when we had inflation last time. Now this time, nobody even knows the hell I'm talking about. I don't get it. Hey, what is the, did you get a chance, what's the current NCAA numbers, and are you, we're talking about segue, because I've been trying to ask you this for a while. And what are the current numbers they get, like, per game, and does it seem like, the guy, I keep talking about the guy, we said if you don't have a $10 million budget, you can't compete today and stuff. What do you make of all that? And then we also have the two guys from Notre Dame that are leaving, that our guys are all over. And
I mean, they're at three, but they have some star players who haven't just made any public decisions yet, and so they would have a if Jalen Harrelson or Marcus Burton leave, that would be kind of disastrous for them. And make no mistake about it, they are being recruited now. There are people calling them up with promises of NIL deals, even though that's not allowed. That's a tampering thing. Until you put your name into the database saying you're going to leave, you are not supposed to be contacted. But that's been that way for a while anyway. But now it's just rampant. Dabble Swinney, when he lost his quarterback at the end of the football season, wound up doing a blow by blow of what that was like in a press conference because he wanted to expose it. But they asked Jeremiah Love. He was asked if people were constantly recruiting him to leave Notre Dame and offering him more money, and he said yeah all the time.
Well, I don't know if you listened yesterday. It was a long discussion with Andrew and Wayne, and Andrew's still with me. He's a guy who thinks that, well, he was all over Clarence Thomas, but because on the whatever it was, where the Citizens United, how she put together a consulting firm to do that before, anyway. But he was all over that. A lot of these guys, they don't necessarily look ahead, and really, it's not their job. I mean, nobody. I don't think if you interviewed the Supreme Court. They did what they did, Kevin, and you didn't want to argue with it because a school doesn't own somebody's name, image, and likeness. There's no way that a guy who's in acting or a lady who's a model can't be a model just because she plays for some college. I mean, it's crazy where they would own that from you. But did anybody think they were opening up the can of worms that it now became you just got paid to play? And all of a sudden this became essentially a fledgling professional league that's probably going to turn out to not even be close to being what college was. And maybe it was going there anyway because money does talk and, BS walks. But does anybody think that this, who is the enforcement? I mean, who could, if Jeremiah Love, because he's gone, we can talk about him, if he got the $2 million offer from Southern Cal's coach, how is it that the Southern Cal program isn't put on the total spanking? And be banned from being in business for 3 years.
I mean, people really need to people need to step up and expose it. If you don't want to partake in that and you get contacted, I think collecting the evidence and turning it over is the first step. Whether the NCAA has either the balls or the inclination, frankly, to enforce it is another issue. I think the latter is that they're not really inclined because, they know that if they really, really squeeze the big conferences, that's just going to accelerate their departure from the NCAA. But when you have something that's not worth protecting, then why protect it?
I guess what I'm sort of curious is, I like the fact that something is broken to where it's in the open, it's competitive. I'm really stunned that the schools have not pushed back to the extent where if these two guys from Notre Dame leave after their sophomore years, you owe us dough. It's a 4-year contract. We're gonna give you this, whatever we're paying you, as long as you're on the team and you show up for practice. And by the way, we're gonna give you $80,000 worth of education. We're good for 4 years. So are you.
Yeah, and we've seen some lawsuits about that, but it winds up in a financial settlement. It's not really restricting movement. It's just, it's fitting it under the cost of doing business. Because if I sign a 2-year, 3-year, whatever agreement, and you claw back some of that money, hey, if my destination school is going to pay me more money anyway, do the math and say, is it worth it for me to make the move or not?
Well, you also,
and you drag out the lawsuit. They might not claw back everything that the school that's losing out believes it's entitled to get. Whatever the number is, it might even be a lower number.
Well, I for sure, even though evidently people in Washington are more interested in trade to market than they are this kind of stuff. By the way, Kevin, I've mentioned it a couple times last night. The market really sunk again on the close, and the S&Ps were down like 120 or something. And all of a sudden, right after sort of the market, the equity markets close at 3, you can still trade after a little bit, but the exchanges close, the final price at 3 o'clock. All of a sudden, the futures run up like 70 points. And I go, what the hell? They're down 117, and now they're like down 55. So that's, 60 points is a real number. And NASDAQ probably went up 150, 200. Sure enough, 2 minutes later, Trump pushed the deadline to reopen the strait from 5 days to 10 days or something. This came out, several minutes after the trades all took place. And then somehow or another, people didn't believe them, and the market ended up going back down, and now we're down here below this morning, kind of below where we were when we started, which is weird. But they sure enough believed them for a few minutes. This is happening like almost every day now. Carl's going to, I'm sure, talk today like he does about these people stealing money in the medical area. Kevin, where is there any sign of enforcement anywhere on anything? I mean, have we just become an immoral state here, or what? I mean, the guys are stealing money in the medical area. We know that. The guys are stealing money from government. The states are stealing it from the Fed. The counties are stealing it from the state. Have we reached a stage here where if you're not cheating, you're an idiot, or what? I don't want to dive into that. That's not me, but I'm wondering.
Well, pretty much. What needs to happen on the college thing is most of the lawsuits have been between player and plaintiff, and it really needs to be, somebody needs to make a tortious interference claim, interfering with a valid contract. And if somebody has a deal with, a Nike or somebody like that, and then then they renege on the deal, and now I'm going to go to a Under Armour school, and but I got convinced to transfer, and partly based on my deal, it's a Nike or an Under Armour or somebody like that who has this third party, this relationship with the athlete, who can say, I have a contract there, I have a contract there, you cannot interfere with that contract, you don't have any right to disrupt that relationship. And that is, that should be a pretty straightforward type of lawsuit. And I would seek maximum damages, and that's a way to clean it up too. Again, the problem is that some of the big players in that field want to benefit from the way things are working now as much as they don't want to lose the lose out to the way things are working now.
Well, there's only Kevin.
Have we become an immoral society? Yes. Have we become a society where a whole lot of people are good at the math that's behind it all, and know what the cost of doing business is, regardless? Yes.
Well, what do you suppose happens if? I mean, there's only a few of these big shoe companies and people like that around, right? So there's four of them.
Yeah, there's a lot more than you think.
Well,
there's a lot of international ones that that play. They play mostly in the NBA, but they exist.
So what happens if the dude leaving Notre Dame? If I knew his name, I won't even say it. But he's leaving. He's got the Irish are paying him, and Under Armour's paying him $200,000. Or something, even though God knows what he's doing for Under Armour.
Yeah, or State Farm or somebody like that, anybody like that.
So all of a sudden, people decide that the Notre Dame basketball program is in shambles, which it is, and all of a sudden they get somebody from Nike says, "Boy, if I can get your ass over to Iowa, we'll pay you $500,000." Well, is Under Armour willing to make that fight when they could be doing the same thing somebody else at another school to another
exactly
school?
Exactly what I just said, yeah. If Under Armour's not doing the same thing, then yes, they should make the fight. But if they're doing the same thing with other athletes, then they're looking and saying, on balance, am I doing better or worse by this arrangement? Hey, I have to go. It's right. 7:41, and I got to shut down and get downstairs. So I'm going to turn you over to Carl and let you go.
Well, have a nice weekend. Enjoy the games. And we'll talk soon. Maybe, who knows, maybe we'll talk even earlier than Wednesday so we can go through some of this NCAA stuff. And you're kicking me to Carl? Okay, I'll forgive you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. How are you, bud?
Well, I am considerably better than Skeens.
Yeah, well.
Paul Skeens.
I know he got shelled yesterday.
Well, by the way, how would you like, if you're a pitcher, you're a major league pitcher, how would you like to have an ERA of 67.5?
It's going to take him a while to work that down. I was doing that calculation last night.
I saw that one and I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I mean, there's bad and then there's holy crap, right? Yeah, this one kind of fits into the second category, I think.
Well, what if you're at least he's a starter? He'll get some innings. What if you're a relief pitcher, and your first game, and like a third of an inning, you give up two hits and then a home run? That's a third of an inning. For God's sake, you'll be working till July to get that down to a number.
Well, yeah, I mean it's that one's definitely got a sting, just to put it mildly. It's funny though because that's a math thing, right? I mean, it's just because of how ERA is computed.
Well,
that
for those that don't know, it's considered runs per game that you give up, earned run average runs per game. So if you give up one run in a third of an inning, which means you've pitched for one out, you pitch for two people, one guy gets an out, next guy gets a home run, your earned run average is 27 if they take you out.
It
would be considered three runs for the inning because you only did a third of an inning, and there's nine innings in a game. You're up to 27,
right? So I mean, this that's what ended up happening to this guy. It's a math problem, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about that is when I read that story and I went and I looked and I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that kind of thing does happen to every pitcher at some point, right? You get in there, you just have a horrible thing,
Hey, can I interrupt for a second? A math question: what if you don't get an out and you give up the home run? Then it's infinite, right?
Yeah, because there's no divisor; it's zero. Right. So, yeah,
that'd be bad.
Well, that one they won't bother printing because you can't divide by zero, right?
Well, but the next game, if you get one out, then you're up to 27.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But on the other hand, the next game, if you pitch, four innings, now it starts coming down, right? So here's the point of me bringing that up because, you know, I'm one of these math guys, right? I get kind of wonky about stuff like that when it comes to the markets and the economy and all the BS that goes on all the time with people claiming this, that, and the other thing. Same thing is, of course, true for any exponential series. It's a math problem, right? Which is why I'm railing about this stuff all the time, and you know, particularly with the medical stuff, have been for, you know, for the last 30 years. I saw this pattern back when I was a CEO running a company, and, you know, looked at it and instantaneously jumped off the page at me as I'm looking at the, you know, at the information as we start getting, you know, renewals for our health insurance premiums and quoting it out, bidding it to, you know, to various vendors, which is, you know, which is what anybody does, right? I mean, every year you go do this. And I mean, I do the same thing with my car insurance, my homeowner's insurance. Maybe you stay where you are because there's a hassle factor and everything else, but if you're not shopping it, you're an idiot because there is a change, okay, that happens. Especially when people start trying to hit you with double-digit percentage increases in price. And so where this was going to end up was very clear, and now it is, and has. And we're still not addressing it. We're still burying it. I mean, you know, you were talking.
Well, now it's so obvious, and yet people still aren't addressing it. You're right.
Well, yeah. And the thing is that, you know, and as you pointed out, you know, this nonsense with the CPI numbers being, you know, being obviously falsely stated as to percentages of actual spend. You can't have something that's you know, 5 or 6% of a basket when it's 20% of the economy. That's BS. All right. I mean, it just is. Now, that it gets hidden through various machinations. But you know what? The same thing was done decades ago with owner's equivalent rent.
Yeah.
Not a single person actually pays owner's equivalent rent in anything.
Right.
All right? They either pay rent or they pay a mortgage. There is no such thing as owner's equivalent, right? It's entirely synthetic. There, they didn't even bother trying.
Well, there was some, as usual, though, Carl, I mean, I would say usual, but many times when, I'll lob the Obamacare in there, too, and I don't want to talk about it, but a lot of times people see something that there's an issue with the way it's currently being calculated, and they try and fix it and totally screw it up or make it even worse because other people get involved and it gets even worse. But I think the generation, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the generation of the owner's equivalent rent was you can't pop the whole, how many people trade, well, it used to be people stayed in their houses longer, but most people, a lot of people live in their house for 20 years. So the price of the house going up really doesn't affect them on a day-to-day basis.
It doesn't?
Well, no. Well, I'm saying if you're in your house 10 years from now and your mortgage is the same, okay, you're going to...
My property taxes aren't.
I'm agreeing with you on this. I'm just saying what caused people to do this, if you give them any sense that they tried to do the right thing, the reason why you would do this is say if inflation is up 10%. I think this almost started during the era I'm always talking about, the 70s and 80s. It actually started in the late 60s, but the cause, if you're in your house, you can't say that the price of your living at home, that your basket for living in your house is gone up 10% a year for 5 years like it did in the 70s when you got the same mortgage you did 5 years before. So it was an attempt to say that to a lot of people, the housing price going up may affect a new homeowner, but it really didn't affect the people who are not new homeowners. Now, whether they should just let that dog die and say, you know, it's just something that happens, which maybe would have been your and my call, somebody decided to, quote, fix it. And they said, okay, we'll take some nebulous number that says, what if the guy who bought the place at 80 grand and he's paying, you know, 400 a month in a mortgage or 300 and has been there, you know, he's on his 29th year, what if he actually had to pay rent for his own house? He'd actually be paying a hell of a lot more than he's paying now. So I think it came in to focus sort of on the other way of what you're talking about.
Well, that's why it was.
Yeah.
And actually, the reason it was done, Chief, at the time is
when did this happen, actually? I mean, I know it was 25 years ago.
It was right around. I think it actually goes back to the Carter inflation spike.
Okay, that's what I would have guessed, actually. Okay.
Yeah, and the reason was the spike in rates. Yeah, it was 1983.
Okay,
January 1983. Hey, Google foo, right?
So right about the end of the inflationary spiral, they decided to do this.
Well, okay, but understand.
Well, that's what happens, right? I mean, by the time you work.
But understand what they were trying to do. Number one was they were trying to neuter that impact.
Yep.
Okay, but they also at the same time were trying to game it on a forward basis because they knew that rates were starting to come down. And remember that during that period of time, while you know, you could buy 30-year bonds and you know, clip coupons for the next 30 years if you wanted to, right?
Yep.
That it was obvious in the term structure of the time that this was not a permanent condition. So what they wanted was to
when you say that, you're talking about long-term rates were 12 and short-term rates were 16.
Right.
Yeah. So
So they, you know, so nobody in the marketplace believed that 16 was where it was going to stay, obviously, right? Because otherwise, long rates would be, you know, 16 plus something for time. They weren't. But the important point here is that the government seeks its own goals, which has nothing to do with your goals and my goals, okay? And one of those goals is to keep things like the annual adjustment in Social Security down.
Right.
Because that comes directly out of the Treasury's pocket. So,
well, there's a difference between their inflation and yours, as I talked earlier.
Well, I understand that, but guess what?
People on Social Security are net negative with their kick-ins to Medicare.
Well, of course they are, yeah. and it's because we are lying in the official. Now, if the official basket actually reflected reality in the economy, then they wouldn't be, because the CPI adjustments would have to make up for it. But of course, that's not how it's done, and that's intentional. So the problem with all of this that you're seeing, right? I mean, you know, and this kind of ties into the stuff that you know, we've seen the last couple of days, like this, you know, this huge spike as the market closed yesterday, right?
Yep.
What a lot of people don't understand, and you do because you trade, and I do because I trade, and both of us have at some point in our trading history, along with anybody else who's ever done it, has gotten one of these things up our butt.
Right.
All right.
And we've never, none of us have ever gotten the phone call, we're on the other side.
Well,
or maybe
right.
Maybe we're jealous. I don't know, but I.
Well, we might be lucky if we catch the right side,
yeah,
of it, but we're never good. Okay, we're never quote unquote lucky because the phone rang first. Right.
Can I segue just a bit? One morning, Dr. Jay and I are doing we're on the score, right? So we're on the 50,000 watt station, and the phone keeps ringing.
Right.
And I'm going, Jan, who is that guy? Get the bleep out of here! Well, it turns out it's a guy. One of these new issue is coming out, you know.
Right.
And so John was always talking to these guys. All of a sudden, the guy is dying to have us, John and me, some, I guess, but John had more dough than me. But they wanted us to be there. We got a chance to participate in this public offering. And the guy's ringing up trying to get John to buy, you know, 5,000 shares or whatever. You know,
yeah,
like 50 grand he wanted or something, big number. And so John says to me, what do you think? And he says, he goes, I'm a little nervous. I go, Jan, how many people had to say no for him to get down to you and
for
me?
For him to call you.
To call you. Listen, he goes, you got a point. He picks it up. He goes, not interested. The stock cratered on the opening. We're like, absolutely got torpedoed as soon as it came out at the price.
Well, you know, during the 90s, one of the things that was so funny about this was that I, at the time, I had an account with DLJ. This was back where, you know, before they got swallowed, you know, the multiple levels of swallowing happened.
Donaldson, Lufkin, and Jenrette, for people who don't know.
Yep. And I.
By the way, our SEC chairman came from there, Arthur Levitt. He was a deal guy. Yeah.
Well, I traded on there because it was, you know, it was an online platform. This was back when, you know, internet stuff was fairly new. Of course, I was one of the guys doing it, right? And they would, every now and then, they would pitch one of these late 90s IPOs to their customers. And you didn't get the opportunity to buy very much. Okay, so I mean, you know,
if you're a really good customer and you got to buy like 200 shares, you knew it was a good one.
Well, it was like, would you, and you could, when you indicated your interest, of course, you know, the S-1 was out there, you could read it, but it was, you know, do you want 100, 200, or 300 shares? Now, you might not get what you asked for,
but that was,
you had to put your interest in for, you know, and usually that was it. It was 100, 200, or 300. Normally it wasn't, you know, would you like 10,000, right? But the thing is that the pattern on these things for a while was that if there was, you know, if you read through it and you try to figure out this is one of the so-called unicorns, and if you think it is, you buy it and you dump it on the opening day because it's you know, it's going to double.
But if you do that, you're probably not going to get called the second time because they went strong.
Well, there was always a threat
included
with these in that if you flip them, We can't legally prevent you from flipping, but if you flip them, we may blackball you from getting the next one.
Right, right? You're not strong hands, was the term.
Yeah, they're like, you know, they really didn't like the idea of you doing that. Well, of course, look, I could read the S-1s, but the reality is I knew that these guys were trying to claim, you know, 25 times the forward GDP of the world for the.
Kyle, other than maybe government. Can you think of anything more structurally, shall we say, where you're telling some person one thing and somebody something else, where your conflict of interest is in an IPO?
Oh yeah, it's absolutely. Well, I
say this just for listeners that don't know. Say if PTI was all of a sudden huge, and I wanted to have an IPO, which I probably wouldn't do anyway, but say I did. And I hired Goldman Sachs. They're going to spend 2 months of my brother telling us how the place isn't worth crap, you know, and, and how we should go out at $30. Meanwhile, they're going
to
have a road show
telling
everybody it's worth like $80 and buy it at $30 because it'll be $80 the first day. I mean, can you think of a more absolutely combined conflict of interest by definition? Is that? And by the way, you're paying these guys consulting fees to do it.
Right. So, right. Oh no. Yeah. It gets worse than you'd think.
Oh yeah.
Right?
It's worse than you think.
Right. I mean, it's bad. But, you know, what you
it's bad, but it's really a lot worse.
Yeah. What you think is bad. The truth is even worse than what you think.
So
I, you know, it was. You know, this was. This was back when, you know, when all the SOS games and everything else were going on too. So, I was. I'd buy these things and I'd the hell with these guys. I'd flip them. If they didn't like me, too bad. And you know, and the funny thing was that the threats most of the time were empty. I had a couple of times that, you know, I didn't get noticed on another one for, you know, 3 months or whatever. But then it started because the thing is, there was one of these things happening every 3 days.
They were going all the time, and, you know,
yeah, it was an every, you know, every three. I mean, if you actually tried to read all the S-1s, you'd have a pile of red herrings on your desk about 5 feet high. But the point is that every time you got one of these kinds of spike events, and the kind of thing that we get now and the speed of them, because it, you know, back then, it would happen. But you actually could sit at a trading terminal, and for the most part stay with it, with the market as it moved. Okay, I didn't have the faster access. Obviously, I wasn't on the floor. I didn't have a direct line to somebody who was, whatever. But on the other hand, it was possible for me to not get completely bulldozered. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, okay, you know, there were times that you win and there's times that you lose, and that's fine. But what most people don't understand about events like what happened yesterday, and these are now starting to happen on a much more regular basis, is that this is exactly the same sort of thing that happened before the 08 blow up. It happened repeatedly. It's happening now because Orange Cheeto is opening his mouth and you know, producing these spikes. This is now the second or third one in the last week or so that we've gotten.
You know, it's not just you and me talking about it. It's all over YouTube. I saw.
I get that, but yeah. Chief, here's what listeners need to understand about this. When those happen, for the person who is on the long side who gets that call, someone else is short. With the exception of an IPO, every single transaction has somebody who either had an opportunity cost that they didn't get, okay, for the person who won, or a real cost that got rammed up their back door.
Right.
And in the futures market, it's always the second.
Right.
All right. So the problem here, and the problem with these kinds of events is when you see that kind of a move, if you've got a stop on it, doesn't save you, because it'll get gapped over and you'll fill.
It'll be worse.
Eight handles. Yeah, yeah, you're going to get filled eight handles off the stop or worse.
Okay,
right.
Let me give, since you know, this is what I do for a living. A stop is if something trades at your. Let's say you bought.
It turns into a market order.
It turns over, if you bought the futures at 6,500, stop, right. You know, 6,495 or something. If it is offered at or trades below 95, yours becomes a market order to sell. So, right. And one of these ridiculous things like Joel's talking about, which are happening more often, you could sell at 6,400 and have it come right back to 6,800, and you're sitting there going, what the hell did I just do?
Right. And that's exactly what happens. And so, you know, what ends up occurring in situations like this is that this takes real capital out of the markets.
Well, plus the poor bastard who's sitting there making a two lot market, you know, a dollar wide, which is he's supposed to do, is all of a sudden the thing that a lot of people you recognize.
He gets 30 handles up his butt.
Okay, yeah. What ends up happening is he now becomes. Since you just sold it to him at some huge high number, pick a stock, for instance, let's say IBM. If you just sold him 1,000 shares at 242 and now it's trading 230, now he becomes a seller at 230 because he's got to get out.
Right.
So you accentuate, and when the trading floor, even though you know specialists and so forth, I mean it had some issues, but. What would happen in any crowd, really, in the New York Stock Exchange or anything, and even the good brokers in the OEX, where I traded, like for instance, there would be an order book, where I'll pick on IBM. It's trading 242, say, I'll use eighths and quarters because that's what I'm more familiar with. Boy, talk show my age. There might be 400 shares open offered at 42 and an eighth. There might be 5,000 at a quarter. There might be 10,000 at 43.
Right.
Or something. So if somebody comes in and says, I want to buy, you know, 200,000 shares of IBM, where can I buy it? Specialist looks at his book and he sees what's there and he says, you can buy it at 243 and an eighth, up a buck, say. Well, what they do is all the people, if you were offered at 242 and an eighth, you get filled at the higher price. You get everybody becomes a block trade at the high price, and all of a sudden, you know, PTI might have a client who's offered a 242 and an eighth, and all of a sudden, Joe got filled at 243 and an eighth, because that's where the print went up. They didn't pick all the people off along the way, which
now they do,
which is a totally different phenomenon, because now every one of those people, if they're just making a market, now becomes a buyer up or a seller down, which is what you don't want.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that, I mean, like, you know, if you're looking at the...
Well, maybe you do want it if you're those guys. You and
well,
I don't want it.
Yeah, if you're them, you want it. Yeah. Right. But, I mean, like, you know, if you're looking at the bid-offer stack in the futures market, when that kind of an event happens, it clears
I'll bet there's none. There's nothing. Because when you see this happen, the people who are a part of it...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They take... If a PTI client has got 100 shares of IBM, a dollar above the market... It's there. I mean, we can cancel it, but we don't get to see the big guy coming in to buy like these other guys do, and then pull all our offers. They get to do that.
Well, and that's the other thing that happens is that the computers are fast enough to get in front of it as soon as it starts.
Well, no, they get to see it.
And yeah, well, they see it before it hits the tape.
which is the sin.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so then you get the
and that's why you get payment for order flow.
Well, and you get these huge gaps, and you get the fill on the back door side, which goes straight up your butt. And you know, like it or not, and now that's a crystallized loss.
Well,
it is what it is.
But how does Carol, we talk about a lot of stuff and we joust about stuff, which is fine, by the way. I love it. The guy, I was on Joel's show yesterday, he kind of turned me into, he wanted to hear all about money supply and economics and how this works and how people don't even recognize it anymore and how it was an absolute household word in 1983 when you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And now nobody, have we got collectively this dumb, or just, or people just, they don't want to hear about stuff that happened like a long time ago?
No.
To get back to your owner's equivalent rent. You and I could make an argument. I mean, I'll tell you what, if you drop this problem on Milton Friedman and the pure economic guys of those days, they would say, if done properly, the numbers should be the same. So it should be the same thing.
Well, yeah, but of
course... But right now, nothing is... There is no free flow of economics. There is no competition, except maybe in the corn crops or something. There's no real perfect competition anywhere. If it was perfect competition... The housing price, the price in there, whether it was the price of somebody to go buy a place, pay the insurance, and rent it to somebody else, or the renter, they should be going up the same way, but they're not.
But realize that the purpose, and this is probably why people do not care about things like what you're talking about here anymore. The purpose of this data. The purpose of collecting it is not to actually inform people about what's going on in the economy. The purpose of collecting the data and publishing it is to game the payouts that somebody is making, okay? And the somebody is the same guys that are collecting and publishing the data, which is the government.
Right.
Yeah, it's another arm, but it's them, okay? And that is the purpose of it. And as I have, you can take a look at the MTS, and it's a Treasury statement, and the MTS will give you the supposed deficit, right, for a year, and every September is the end of the fiscal year, so there it is. Okay, now how is it that if that's the deficit and I go to the Treasury's debt to the penny chart, which is the check register of flows in and out, okay? Why aren't those numbers the same?
They're not even close.
Well, because, and here's the thing. The one that matters is the debt to the penny number. That's the number that actually impact, when people talk about what the deficit's really running and things like this, and this is why I've said, when we got the Fed decision, I put up an article that afternoon that would, if I was chair of the Federal Reserve, what my Fed statement would have been, what I would have said when I stepped to the dais after the announcement comes out, and then Powell does his press I would have stepped up, I would have given him the press conference, and I would have said, here is the bottom line. Last fiscal year, ending in September 30th, the federal government ran a 6.98, basically 7%, fiscal deficit. That is simply the difference in outstanding federal debt divided into the GDP of the economy. Period. So it's mathematics. That's what they ran. It is, if you pay someone to borrow, which is what happens anytime that interest rates anywhere on the curve are below that deficit amount, you are not only creating malinvestment, you are deliberately enabling stealing. And this is the reason that we have a vertical line in so many areas of the economy, all going up your back door, such as healthcare and everything else. It's also funding all this AI nonsense, which by the way, has no ROI in the present day, but people are doing it anyway. And the reason is that they're not having to pay an actual positive rate of interest in order to borrow the money to put these things up. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Because our mandate is to not do that.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's actually a law. It's not.
We don't pay any attention to
law. I understand that, but here's what we're going to do. We are going to take the difference, the percentage difference, divide it by 4, and add 50 basis points to that difference, and we are going to adjust rates, in this case upwards, by the larger of either that or 25 basis points until we reestablish that relationship. And we're going to do it every meeting. And the and then we're going to continue to do that once we get to equilibrium based upon the actual facts of what Congress does. Because we do not control the congressional balance sheet and the Treasury's balance sheet. Congress does that along with the president.
Well, the president just says now he can go pay all the guys that...
I understand that. So here's what you tell him. If you want to see a 3% short-term interest rate, then the federal government may not run a fiscal deficit more than 2.5. And if they do run a 2.5, then you're going to see a 3% short-term interest rate. Why? Because that's the formula. And that's what we're going to do, period. End of conversation.
No, you mean it's not just the Fed and the president bitching at the Fed and getting those rates down, and he can just do that?
And then what happens is you get an asymptotic increase.
Right.
Where you have, you know, an exponential expansion of the debt that occurs and an exponential expansion of spending in many of these areas. And by the way, Chief, here's another thing that goes along with this, okay? You know, you and I have gone back and forth on this whole thing with illegal immigrants and, you know, and stuff like this and policy and all this. Here's something that the people of this country and the politicians need to understand. An awful lot of people, myself included, voted for every last one of those people to be expelled. Now, I understand that you've got your point of view on this, that that's not what you wanted to see happen. But an awful lot of people voted for exactly that to happen. That's
okay,
what we've
okay,
voted.
Now, whoa.
Hold on a minute. The Immigration Nationality Act sets forward the procedure by which that is supposed to occur. Now, that's been amended a couple of times, including by Clinton. But this is black letter law that these are the facts. Now, we've now got two appeals court decisions that are out from two different federal circuits, which is interesting. Because we've got congruence, which doesn't happen all that often, but it did in this case. And there are two distinct ones that say that, no, if you got into the country without presenting yourself legitimately at a port of entry, you don't magically become not presenting yourself for admission. And if you haven't presented yourself for admission, you're not entitled to bail because you were never lawfully admitted into the United States in the first place. So therefore, you don't have that, and ICE has every right to detain you without bond until
ICE needs to be disbanded tomorrow.
Well, I understand that you and I have a different point of view on this, okay? My point of view...
Actually, we don't, to be honest with you.
Well,
My concern with you and a few other on the show is I have... If somebody, some druggie, barrels across the line, is selling drugs here, is a bad guy, I want him out of here maybe more than you do. But the idea, there's the breadth of how bad this has been for 50 years, and how many people are here that ought to be citizens, that people are shocked they aren't, and make it more difficult. There's probably millions of people here that have been here for 25, 30 years, have a job, have a family, are paying into stuff, and technically, I guess, well, this is expanded to anybody who looks Hispanic, and we can go grab them on the street. And people will look at the Polish cleaning lady who's been here for 25 years and go, she's a criminal. She's paying in. She's we've expanded this to...
Wait. If the Polish cleaning... Your mythical Polish cleaning lady...
I'm not mythical one. I know several of them, so they're not mythical.
Hold on a minute. How's she paying in?
She has a Social Security card.
Where'd she get it from?
She got it in 1995. Said you walked in and said, I'm working. They gave you one.
No, okay. So she didn't steal somebody else's identity.
No.
Okay. Well, that is a different situation. But you look at what just happened up there.
Okay. What about the people? And I have a friend and a listener whose parents used to own a restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Okay. People would come in a Social Security card that was obviously... not done that well. We're talking 35, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You sent the check, you sent the money into the IR, the Social Security, they never called up and said, hey, this guy doesn't have a number. They never called you.
What was one of the things that this fiasco has exposed? Okay, that you have, because you had that meatpacking plant, I think it was in Iowa, where they came in and they raided it and found that essentially all of the people working there were illegal immigrants.
Yeah, and they all had a Social Security card and they're all sending checks in.
Well, hold on, man. You'd think this is a absolutely throw the operators and owners and managers in jail under 8 U.S.C. 1324 because they were knowingly hiring illegals, because the entire place, all of them are illegals, okay? Not a few, all of them.
Now, when you say illegal, were they here on a temporary green card just to go home or what?
No. They were all, no, they none of them had authorization to be in the United
States. They just swam over temporarily
or otherwise. Okay, now some of them have been here for a very long time, but the point is they were all illegal aliens. Okay, every one of them. They were not here under parole or, you know, asylum pending or whatever.
But they weren't paying anybody cash under the table, were they?
Well, hold on a minute. The reason they couldn't arrest the managers is that when these guys came in, they had forged credentials, they ran E-Verify on them, and they passed.
That's wild.
All right? Now, here's the problem with this. The government, listen, if I can find $10 billion worth of fraud in the Doge Medicaid dump in 17 seconds with an SQL statement on a little server sitting in my basement, all right, which is 1/10,000th of the size of the ones that the computers that the government has, then the government, the IRS, and DHS can absolutely know that Jose, who just gave you a Social Security card and you ran him through E-Verify, that either that guy's dead.
They love to take the check.
I understand that, but I'm saying you can absolutely determine that either the guy's in the master death file, because when my mother died, by the time I got back to the house after making the original arrangements, I had a letter from Social Security.
I noticed this accountant dude who does work for all these companies. He goes, I was listening to the show the other day. You're talking about these people. He goes, there's a guy at this place. He's retiring. He's like 67. He's worked for the guy for 42 years. He's got a Social Security card. He's been paying, and now the guy's not going to get Social Security. By the way, he doesn't get covered by Medicare. I go, 42 years? They took the checks for 42 years on a fake card? He goes, yeah. Okay. Tell me how this guy's screwing me.
Well, okay. But the problem is, the guy who had his, if he's not dead, okay, if he's not in the master death file, and it's actually a valid number, all right, then he screwed someone else.
He got a fake card with a fake number.
It wasn't fake. It's valid.
Well,
okay.
He didn't make it up. Long before I met Carl, I read this article that how many numbers were all zeros.
No, they were so bad.
Okay, and they still took the checks for those.
Chief, I'm not arguing that, okay? I'm saying that anyone that believes that the government, within the government, is not deliberately suborning this and has been for 25 years is out of their gourd.
Yeah, they don't want the person to become a citizen because then they got to pay it back.
Well, the problem you have, and this is exactly the same thing that's going on with the medical system, all right? It is a felony to charge you a different price for the same thing based upon who your car insurance company. I mean, you'd never tolerate that at the gas station, for Christ's sake.
By the way, I don't know if you were listening yesterday. I went through this and used your name with Andrew, because Andrew was, you know, a serious attorney.
Yeah.
I said, how is it that the Supreme Court, like, does stuff without seemingly any... Well, first of all, I said, why... They don't seem to have any enforcement, and we try to go back to, because Andrew's kind of, you know, it's not his whole livelihood where he's a constitutional scholar, but he really likes to look into that stuff. And I said, how is it that, you know, we were the first place? He's the one who explained this all to me, that the U.S. was the first place, our Constitution, who knows if we're actually the first place, but the difference between our Constitution and virtually all the stuff in Britain and all these other places is that the Supreme Court, the judicial branch, is considered, it's almost like the Holy Trinity. It's like it's an equal branch of government,
right?
Essentially. He said, but I said, to me, it isn't really, because there's no enforcement power whatsoever.
Right, they don't have an army.
Yeah, you know, well, basically, but I'm saying, and the biggest example of that is, and Carl brings it up all the time, and he's not the only one, that all this pricing, the different price stuff that you see in hospitals. I said, Andrew, I know just my little bit of the Clayton Act and the Sherman Act. That's flat ass illegal, and the Supreme Court has basically said twice, I think, yeah, it's flat ass illegal, and yet they do it all the time, and they never either send a letter to Biden or Trump and say, hey, assholes, you're supposed to, this is illegal. What's the matter with you? Same thing happened with the sports stuff, the name and image and line. Same thing happens on virtually, if people just don't want to do it, they don't do it. I mean, we don't have any. The part that, this is the thing that I'm more worried about in this country than anything else, Carl, and we could talk about different, everything we talk about is symptoms of the same problem. Why doesn't somebody get together and say, okay, let's fix this immigration stuff? If you've been here this many years and you're willing to do this, guess what? You get to be a citizen. And by the way, the people who are here that aren't supposed to be here are dealing drugs. Let's get them the hell out. I have no problem with any of that. Why would I? I mean, it makes perfect sense. But the seeming like, how do you expect this administration, who seems to spend a boatload of time on their own money, and you know it started with Cheney, and it started, you know, there was people, Congress along the way, I mean, somehow or another, the cash grab, and how do you expect one of those people who's taken money from the drug companies the day they got into business, how do you expect them, and are now trading against the market? I mean, how do you expect Trump to break an hour out of his day and say, boy, we gotta worry about this, the drug companies and how these hospitals are screwing people. The man is incapable of that. There's no chance him or anybody around him, or probably any Democratic senators, ever breaking a minute out of their day to say this is a problem we're going to solve, because they're too busy. What do they do all day other than steal and do other kinds of stuff? I mean, the respect that we're going down a rat hole on this whole thing. But nobody is going to do what you want them to do. And by the way, I want them to do the same thing you want them to do. I just look at it and I go, I don't see it happening. And part of it is,
well,
when people ask me, because they know I do this on the show, they go, like, kind of, what about like this inflation stuff? Boy, it's getting, prices are going higher. And I break into what I think is happening, and gotta try and keep the money supply stuff and down to a dull roar, and everybody's having a beer. And I said, but God, these are all intelligent people, attorneys and everything else. And I'll say something like, now tell me, who do you think the biggest beneficiary is of inflation? It's like I asked them to solve to the last digit the value of pi. They look at me like I got five heads, and I go, it's the government. And they look at me and they go, what are you talking about? I go, how do people that have advanced degrees in everything
not understand this?
Not understand this.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, you know, as I pointed out, you know, when I wrote Leverage, as I've known for quite a while before then, as I keep trying to get people to understand and point out, the problem with inflation in general is that when you first start, it looks like you got a free lunch.
Are you quoting Milton Friedman? It feels so good. It's like your first beer, is what he said.
Well, why does the drug dealer give you the first hit for free?
Yeah.
Right? Because he knows you'll be back for another one, and you'll be compelled, if you get a few hits, in order to, you know, to buy another one, regardless of what it costs. The problem with this is that when you do this, if you just graph out the difference between debt carrying costs and what you get, I mean, if you just accept as axiomatic that every dollar that someone borrows gets spent, all right, duh, right? I mean, why else would you borrow it? All right, then that is the impact there is always immediate. And yet the overhang, of course, comes over time. The problem with that is that if you maintain that posture, the interest carrying costs will always exceed income if you do it indefinitely.
The interest becomes the more than the nut.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So you start with a gap that gets wider, which is the part that feels good. But then when it starts to close, you realize, hey, wait a minute, there's a problem here, because people start getting screwed. And ultimately, if you don't stop it, it collapses the economy and the government. And there goes civil society. And it happens every single time. And it has happened every time within
society. We always think we're immune.
Well, I understand that, but it is. But nobody has ever listen. You can't argue with mathematics. Mathematics just
look
is.
look at the Weimar, look at Argentina, look at Venezuela, look at Turkey. They're right there.
Point being that mathematics is mathematics. Okay, it's not going to change. And so here we are with this reality that we're dealing with. It has now gone vertical. And the problem, it's the same problem here that you have with the illegal immigration issue. All of that Biden dumped into the country is a cost push inflationary pressure, because the first law of economics is supply and demand.
I don't think they're helping those people at all. But hey, can I give a quick example before break?
I'm not saying you're helping people. Here's the problem.
Well, but I mean, what was sold to people is we're helping these people. That was all bullshit.
That's not what happened. Okay.
Yeah.
But here's the problem that you have generally, and it's in both places. It's in all of these issues. If I can't vote for a policy and then have it occur, if I can't do that anymore, all right? I mean, Orange Man said,
okay,
we were going to do X, Y, and Z, including, by the way, taking care of the medical stuff and all this, right?
But every... Why would anybody... The whole...
Chief.
I mean, come on. We have two people running, neither of which anybody wanted to run, really.
So assuming that I actually want this to happen, whatever the policy is, whether it's on immigration, whether it's on money supply, whether it's on, whatever. Assuming I want this to happen, and I vote with the majority of the other people in the country for that policy, and that person wins.
And they don't do it.
All right? And then they don't do it.
Well, that happens.
They never intended to do it. They were lying.
They never intended to do it.
Right.
But Jay, before we go to break, I just want to give a little bit of an example without going crazy here. I could give some stories about when I first got out of school. This is all horrible to say, but I did taxes for a few people.
Yeah.
Family and a couple of nice-looking girls. Is that okay to say?
Of course.
But, in those days, you remember when you actually got the whole thing in the mail from the government?
Oh, yeah.
This big, huge thing with all the deductions, all the rules, all the tables, the whole
thing. All that, yeah.
It was like 30 pages or more. And you'd go through, and this is during the inflation stuff, when I'm working at Pullman, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there's 7 tax brackets. We went down to 3 or 4, now we're back up to 7. In those days, there had to be, 15?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
and
you could actually get screwed by getting a raise.
Well, that was my point, is that during the Carter/Reagan inflation, you ended up with people that used to make 16 grand. At the end of the day, were making 22. But the difference in tax rates between 16 and 22 was much higher than it was when it was 16 before, and it was the same amount of money.
Right.
So when you ask me why governments, I won't go into the Medicare, Medicaid, and all the other stuff that Carl could help me with, but this is the simplest one. If you make $12,400 to $50,400, which is your adjusted gross, I mean, all stuff goes on before this, you're paying 12% of that amount, right? You pay 10% up to $12,400, and you pay 12% from $12,400 to $50,000. But once you go over 50, you're paying 22%.
Right.
So if, and by the way, without getting into it, I don't know what the numbers are now, but the high 40s is kind of the number where you get help from Obamacare or you don't. I don't know where that number has gone to now, but let's say it still was there. So if you're making 45 and you've got to get your own insurance, which means you're in pretty bad shape insurance-wise, you were getting some help. And I didn't dig into the whole mess from the government at 45 or 48. Well, now, after several years of inflation with COVID and everything, say 5 years, the prices are up, I'm going to say 40% across the board, Carl, and I don't think you can argue with me too much on that. Okay, now if you're making 48, well, say, you know, say 50 because it's 50 to 50 401. Now 40% on the top of that is what, 20 grand, right? So if you got the raise to 70, which I think most people didn't, right? They you know, I don't think everybody's gotten. You know how many people that have gotten 20% raises in the last 5 years? I don't. But say,
oh, good God, no. Yeah.
So okay, so now you're making 70. You've got the same amount of scratch, really, in terms of buying power. But now you're getting no help from the government and Obamacare.
Well, it's not the same buying power because guess where it went, right? Well,
so and you're also on the additional 20. You're paying 22% in taxes versus 12, which means they're getting $2,000 of that right off the top. So now we get another $2,000 from you from tax wise, plus the state if you have one. They're also getting more on the insurance side. So actually, you're a net loser, and the government's a net winner, even though you think you're okay and you're not.
Oh, Chief, at the point that when these so called enhanced subsidies expired. But even with them, your effective tax rate when you hit that cap, okay, if you're a few dollars over that cap on your AGI, and by the way, what it actually counts is MAGI, which includes tax-exempt interest.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about getting screwed and qualified dividends, which normally you don't pay taxes on, but for the purpose of computing this, it counts.
Yep.
All right. So you get it in the butt. You actually have you can get to the point that you essentially have a 90 to 100% effective tax rate on like the second $20,000.
Yeah,
you make.
Well,
okay. Essentially, you don't get any of it.
But these guys, they're either stone cold ignorant or they do it on purpose. I mean, when Trump.
Oh, it's obviously intentional.
Well, when Trump gave the thing where you can only deduct. $10,000 in state tax stuff. And
yeah.
He was pointing. This is 8 years ago. He's pointing at 6 years ago.
Well,
he's,
he was doing that because of the crazy.
That's what he told you. But the point is it was to punish people in Connecticut that paid a lot of property taxes. Okay, that was this blue state of all these assholes we don't like in Connecticut. But in fact, 5 years later, all kinds of people were caught up in that. You know, we'll go to break here. You know how many people. I mean, Carl, I'm going to guess. I never asked you personal stuff or people on the thing. I'm going to guess that a lot of our listeners, and me included on several occasions, had to at least go through the alternative minimum tax calculation.
Oh yeah, well the AMT, yeah.
Now you probably know the answer to this, and I'm going to quiz you. When that tax was enacted, how many people did it affect that year?
Oh, I bet it boned a bunch of people. A huge number.
No, it was like 35 people or some ridiculously small number.
Oh, really?
But because
the AMT got them.
Yeah, the alternative minimum tax only applied to very few people that had massive write-offs and stuff like that. What they tried to do is say you couldn't just give all your money to charity, especially if it was your charity.
Oh no! I've been hit by AMT.
Okay, but I'm saying when it first started, it affected. So few people, nobody cared about it. But now that we've inflated our way up, and now everybody's got to look at it. It was never intended to be that way. It's like when Trump did the thing on the, this if you're paying this, nobody paid 10 grand or 15 or whatever it was, 30 grand in property taxes. Now everybody goes, wait a minute, I'm paying that too. This blows.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. All right, this is one of those, if you think about this, all right.
Save it there for a break. We're running over.
All right.
SP Futures down 28 and NASDAQ is down 155. We were up last night. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jacks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. We got Carl with us, and we have Ricky on board. S&P futures down 27. NASDAQ futures down 151. All we do is be down these days. It's not good. I mean, like I say, my people are protected. We're doing okay, but it sure as hell isn't like winning. I'd rather be winning. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up down 306. It's 1.4%. These guys are taking a hit. Puts you down 38, not so bad there, 0.4%. CAC around down 59.8%. So the DAX is taking a big whack over there. Asia, Nikkei down 230, 0.4%. Hang Seng is actually up. It has been down this week, but it's up today, 95.4%. Shanghai up 24.6%. So China's kind of okay today. The rest of the stuff is the way. Yesterday, we were down 114 in the S&P, which is a huge data. It's 1.7%. NASDAQ down 521. It's 2.4. The stocks that are absolutely, we got to get Carl to ask, talk about these, absolutely get annihilated as it's Microsoft every day. And Meta is down like $40 yesterday. It's down from, it's trading 541. I'll get the high there for a second when Ricky gets to the other stuff. Bonds up 5 basis points, 4.47, 10-year. 30-year, I've got it 4.98. Every day, I said, watch these numbers. If they keep going, this market has got a problem. And I don't know if people say I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. So I don't want them going any higher. Bund up 5 basis points, 3.11. But get this one. Japan is up to 2.4 almost. It's up 10 basis points today. That's danger because they have a bigger deficit problem than we do. That's real danger. I'm going to ask Carl to comment on that as well. Oil up another 268, 97.16. Brent, which had just snuck under $100, back to 111.44. That's more of the world price. That is real danger. RBOB 320, it's up 7 cents. So add some distribution and profit onto that. Add 95 cents tax on that. We're talking 475, 450 to $5 gas everywhere soon. So if you find it at 416, maybe you want to get some, although that causes a problem. Gold up $43, 44.19. Silver down 10 cents, 67.83. Foreign exchange, and this has been all over the place. Now dollar's back into being a safe haven again. Okay, so we had a good month this month. The euro is down to 115, and the British pound's down to 132. That's the lowest we've seen in a bit. We've got crypto down 1,900 points. They're down to 66,000. They were well over 70 a few days ago. So they're taking a hit now, too. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 here in Chicago. 32 degrees right now with a high of 40. Breezy and colder with some clouds, then sunshine. Tonight will be breezy with a low of 30 degrees. Over to Phoenix, 68 degrees right now with a high of 102. Record-breaking temperatures and danger of dehydration and heat stroke. Tonight will be partly cloudy.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I know, right? Tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 74 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, disabled vehicle on the right shoulder of Kennedy West at Central Avenue, exit 83B. Currently not affecting traffic. Stevenson inbound from 294 is about 25 minutes. Mild traffic starts at Central and ends at Kedzie Avenue. All other major expressways are moving at posted speed. For sports, MLB, not a great start of the season for our teams here. White Sox lose to Brewers 14-2. Cubs lose to Nationals 10-4. And Diamondbacks lose to Dodgers 8-2. Tonight we have the Diamondbacks facing Dodgers again at 9:10. For the NHL yesterday, the Blackhawks lose to Flyers 5-1. And tonight they play the Rangers in New York at 6 p.m. Finally, for the NBA, Bulls at Thunder tonight at 7 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Hey, Carla, before we get into all the different three different questions, I want to ask you about Japan, all the other stuff that we can stop what we're talking about. But I kind of a I'll say a personal question, but when I don't mind doing this because the same thing affects the listeners. Yesterday, I get this phone call in my cell, and it's a 330 area code, and I'm hoping the phone says it's a spam thing. I don't have to answer it, but it doesn't. So I answer it, and it's this guy with an Indian accent telling me he's from the Department of Homeland Security. And he has my name. He's asking me if I'm expecting a package. And I go, wait a minute, who is this? He goes, well, is your address? And he had my right address, my home address. And I said, you know, I'm not, this call's over, and I hung up. So being the knucklehead that I am, I dialed the number back, thinking maybe Homeland Security will actually pick up the phone. I get some lady that runs a tax service. And she says, I have no idea somebody's using our phone number. How do you use somebody else's phone number? Carl, are you with us? What did we lose, Carl?
Oh, I'm here. I'm sorry.
How do you get somebody else's phone number?
All right. So what's happening here is that they don't actually have somebody else's phone number.
but this is a fairly serious problem, and I've been raising hell about it for a long time. It's caused by the various carriers. Almost all, you know, pretty much everybody is all on cellular now, right?
Yep.
The old landline people are pretty much gone. When you, there are two interfaces that you have when it comes to the calling number. The one that you all see on your phones is caller ID, all right? There is a second one. It's known as ANI within the vernacular. And if you have an 800 number, you get that one. And the reason you get that one is because you're paying for the call, all right? And therefore, because you're paying for the call, you have the right to know exactly where the billing came from. Problem is, we have today this way of doing phone systems, which was in its infancy when I was running my internet company, called SIP. SIP is essentially a shorthanded interface methodology to the phone network. And there is absolutely zero policing going on within...
Well, that's a common theme of us, isn't it?
Yeah, within the existing phone companies with regards to whether or not the number that the calling party is using actually belongs to them.
Yeah, but if I call you, how do I tell the phone to give you a different number?
Well, you don't. But if you were using a SIP trunk, you can, and it's trivial to do. And the reason that it's trivial to do is because we don't actually expect the carriers to have a registry. They have one, of course.
But how did they pick this poor lady with the tax?
Well, they grab a random number and they use it. And the reason they do that is because, obviously, if it had to be verified as theirs, guess what? Somebody could show up and knock on their door and say, "Hey, jackass." Okay?
Yeah.
All right? So this has become an extremely serious problem. One of the big ones that's going around now is the same thing happening with text messages, where you get this text message that says that you have unpaid traffic tickets from, you know, from Maryland.
By the way, the Secretary of State here is now running a series of commercials saying, do not send them
a
dime.
Click.
Do not click, and by the way, send us the number.
Right, do not click
yeah.
that link.
Yep.
Because if you do, it's going to go somewhere that isn't there, that looks like there, and you just gave them your bank account information or credit
yeah.
card or whatever, and they're going to screw you. So, yeah. There is. This is all from the same basic thing, which is that we do not force these companies to actually have an enforceable mechanism against this kind of thing. And it's not hard for them to do, because when you port your number somewhere, if you know, let's say you're on AT&T and you decide that AT&T sucks and you want to go to T-Mobile or whatever, okay? Which, you know, I mean, that happens all the time, right? Somebody says, well, this carrier sucks, I want to go to this one. Okay, fine. The fact that your number can be moved around is completely, there has to be a way to be, well, it can only be in one place.
Yeah.
All right. So this synchronization does exist, but we don't demand that the carriers actually verify that when somebody says this is where the call's coming from. Now, here's the thing. Being able to actually spoof that to an extent within the block of numbers you own is something that is totally normal, totally standard, and there's nothing wrong with it. As an example, when I ran MCS, we had a block of numbers that ours.
So do we at PTI.
Right. Yeah. And yet, if I pick up the phone and I, you know, dial 9 to get an outside line, I get a dial tone, I dial, I want the person on the other end to get my main numbers
right
number on their
well,
display.
Our stuff's 20 years old, and we do. I mean, if you pick up the
well,
third
exactly.
line, it's going to go out at our main as our main number.
Even though it didn't.
Right, right.
Okay, but I owned all of those trunks. The numbers that are attached now.
Yeah, so do we.
Well, every trunk has a number attached to it, okay? But you don't want that as a business. You want it to ring on, you know, as if it
came. We still have an 800 number, but nobody uses it anymore because nobody pays anything.
Right, because, you know, they don't have to worry about it now, right?
Yep.
But that is one of the distinctions. And the reason the spamming and these scams are going on is because we're not enforcing this.
Well, when we switched carriers, it took like 60 days for them to transfer over to the 800 number. What's that all about?
Well, it takes longer for them to do that simply because they're just slow and not very efficient. And the other thing is that all the billing that came back off of your previous carrier has to be reconciled. Otherwise, those guys get stuck with it.
Okay. All right, so now let's get on to more important stuff than me. Although some of this stuff I think is important. Like you said, do we ever talk about anything where people enforce anything? Good Lord. This morning I saw a guy blow through the left lane, through the left turn lane and go through the red light in front of 12 cars. I'm like, good Lord. That's like the new trick now. But I never see a policeman. I don't know where the hell they are. But I'm sure they're doing something somewhere, so I'm not denigrating them. But they're sure as hell not like they used to be, or you actually might see one around the place once in a while. But what is I sent you the thing the other day, and you were kind of outraged at me. I was talking about Japan, but
yeah,
I see this stuff. It's all the same issue. Everything, it's always the same problem. I mean, if the oil prices go up and it affects Japan, they have a real problem. Their debt's worse than ours, right? I don't know how they manage to do that, but they are. But they also own $1.2 trillion of our stuff. What if this is? Do you think the people in charge have any idea how linked together all this is? And you can't do one thing. You can't just mess up one spot without it popping up every other place.
Well, yeah, I don't know that. You know, I mean, I think most of the people that are, are in our government are just as. We have the stupid party and the corrupt party. Take your pick, right?
Yeah.
But the, this stuff that's going on with all of these different areas of instability and the scams, nobody wants to upset that apple cart, because if you do, then obviously there's going to be an issue here, right? And that issue is going to be in the economy. It's going to show up in GDP. Nobody wants to do anything that would potentially damage either that or, for that matter, the stock market. Duh. All right.
Well, it's being damaged. I mean,
but the thing is this. You know, as I pointed out, Chief, before this, this Iran thing, came into being, all right, we already had in the PPI numbers cost push inflation that's going to go through the system. Now, if it's in the PPI, it can only come out on the other end in the CPI in one of two places. It either hits people's operating margins because they eat it, all right,
yeah,
or they pass it through to the customer, and it ends up in the CPI. Those are the only two possibilities.
But then again, what you just said, an economic thing, is a problem, because some firms can't pass it through because their stuff may be more competitive, whatever it is. They don't have pricing power. Some firms can. So you benefit, again, it's like benefiting the government. If you raise prices, yeah. I mean, probably Home Depot is a winner.
Well,
but maybe some other place isn't, type of thing.
Okay, maybe.
Maybe.
But in aggregate, the effect is damage gets done to either the consumer gets damaged, okay?
Right.
Which takes more money out of their pockets. That means they spend less because they get less,
right?
Okay. Or it hits operating margins. That's bad for the capital markets because that shows up in your earnings statement.
Yeah, well, right? It's bad everywhere. So, I mean, there's no.
Well, I'm just saying there isn't a good outcome from that. Okay, it's just a question of who gets cornholed worse, right?
Well, I mean, in the restaurant industry, if you do this economically, this is an F paper if I turned it into somebody, but by and large, if you and I owned. You know, if we had a saloon that's been there for 40 years and we own the building, now, of course, there's an opportunity cost to that. That's why it's an F paper. But if you and I own the building and all of a sudden all these other guys' leases go up and their price of a drink goes up $2 and we raise ours $2, we go, this is pretty cool. Because, but it depends on where it pops out.
Well, now, right. And
but then again, we turn around, if you look at the economics of it, what it means that our building has reached the point where if we actually wanted to sell it, we might want to sell it, type of thing. So there's no free lunch anywhere, like you're saying.
No.
But to some people, it can be a free lunch for a while.
Well, some people benefit from it, that's without a doubt. The thing that I find most interesting about the dynamic that we're seeing right now is that the expectation, and this is you know, where Trump stepped on his own, you know what, all right? He's, you know, he came out the other day. This guy within the space of 5 minutes, it sounded like Mr. Potato.
Yeah.
Okay, who we used to have in office, right? Yeah. I mean, he literally sounded like Mr. Potato. He not only repeated himself, he like backtracked it. We're not talking about like something like a 2-hour press conference where, you know, okay, maybe he forgot something. No, this was like repeated garbage. And the point that I made to some people on my forum is that he's backed into a corner now. And the genesis of all of this is the lie that he used to sell this, which is that Iran was 2 weeks away from having a nuclear bomb. All right. The truth is that no, they weren't. One of two things was the case. Now, I had somebody challenge me on my
forum. Before you go into all that, he also said when we dropped the bunker buster, wherever the thing was, that we sent the program back. Was it 5 years? Now, are we, 4 months later?
Well, he said we blew up all of their enriched uranium. Then all of a sudden they've got 600 kilograms of it, or 450 or whatever it is. All right. Well, here's the problem. So I had somebody challenge me on this and said, well, you know, there's these people, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists say that, yeah, technically it is possible to make a nuclear bomb out of 60% enriched uranium. And I pointed out that there have been exactly two successful nuclear weapons set off using uranium, one by the Chinese and, of course, Little Boy, okay, that we dropped on Hiroshima, which we did without testing it first.
If I forget to ask at the end of when you're done with this, Korea claims they've got all kinds of them now. North Korea, what kind do they have?
Those are plutonium.
Okay, they are. Okay.
Okay, and by the way, Fat Man, which was Nagasaki, was a plutonium implosion weapon, and all
why,
the rest
why didn't
of
that
the,
one not do as much damage? It missed the target or something?
No, it was. It's just, well, so Hiroshima had, it's the topography of the land, basically. Okay. But the thing about this is, and as I pushed back on this guy that pointed this out, I said we have to define what a nuclear weapon is. Okay, because the United States.
Oh, you don't ever want to confuse the bullshit with the facts.
Don't ever confuse people with facts, right? And I said, look, if you want to get technical about this, SL-1, which was one of the first test reactors in the United States, was a nuclear weapon. Why? Because it went prompt critical, blew up, and killed like three people that were in the building at the time. Now, that wasn't intentional, of course. Okay.
Well, one of the University of Chicago, once they went critical, they put the rods in and stopped it, right, or something?
Well, the thing is, a reactor always has a reactivity K of exactly 1.0, and it's designed that way on purpose. And the reason is because you're talking about reactions that happen in microseconds, nanoseconds. If the reactivity goes over 1.0, it explodes. So that's super critical. Prompt critical is essentially a cascade. So it's essentially another level of that, which is what a bomb is. But here's the thing. I can make Fermi 1, for example, in Monroe, was a liquid sodium cooled fast breeder reactor designed to produce plutonium. You could use it for weapons, but that's not why they built it. They built it to close the fuel cycle so that we could do reprocessing. And that reactor ran on fast neutrons, so it did not need a moderator, and its fuel load was about 25% enriched. Okay, now fast reactors will not run on the 5% enrichment that goes into a power reactor, and they use that lower enrichment intentionally because it is much safer. If there's a meltdown, something goes wrong, it cannot form a critical mass without the moderator. It can't happen. And so as a result, that's a major safety bonus. And on top of that, You don't care about size. In fact, you want big because you want to make a lot of steam because you want to make a lot of power. All right. So, you know, so all these things kind of align. With a fast reactor, that's not, you know, none of that stuff applies.
Well, so it's essentially, to cut it short a little bit, because I want to talk about margin interest and stuff.
Basically,
was weapons of mass destruction BS.
Well, except it's not. Well, Iran has had 20% enriched uranium for 10 years. Okay? If I wanted to make a nuclear weapon, I could take a core, assemble a core, very similar to what was used at Fermi 1. I don't have to actually make it explode. All I got to do is have my bomb or my truck that's got it or do whatever it's in, yank the control rods out of it in the middle of your city. All right? Now, it is going to run away in a supercritical format until it melts. And then, God forbid, if when it melts, it doesn't scatter itself enough, you know, as it spreads out and it stays critical. All right? And this thing is going to catch on fire. It's going to burn. That's a nuclear weapon, for Christ's sakes. It's a critical reaction.
It comes down to, and I want to get to some of this margin stuff and everything. It's actually down a little bit, the margin numbers. But it comes down to what is our responsibility. We know that there's a lot of bad people in the world. And by the way, we created some of them. This Middle East stuff is pretty, it's pretty much the... I mean, we're the one who threw the guys out in 54 because they wanted to nationalize the oil companies, right? So,
right.
I mean, we've been involved in this place since the first barrel of oil was found. But there's all kinds of these other no good nicks around. You watch Saturday Night Live, and they do a pretty nice job. But the one guy goes, let me get this straight. We had this old guy who didn't like us. We're the great Satan, and our ideologies are opposed to theirs, and we know that. So we knock him off. Now we get a young guy who hates us even more. And oh, by the way, we killed his family, so he hates us even more and more and more. He goes, what did we accomplish here exactly?
Chief, here's the point. If the Iranians had wanted to nuke somebody, if they actually were going to do it, they've had a decade to do it.
Yeah.
It's not something that was going to become possible in 2 weeks.
No.
It's something that they've had the ability to do all the time. And, oh, by the way, we claimed earlier this year that we blew up all their stuff. So if we blew up all their stuff, what were they going to nuke somebody with?
Well, I'm very concerned with the Israeli and us. I think we're on two different pages here.
We absolutely are.
And that's a problem.
And Israel's interest is near as well, I mean, from Netanyahu's own statements, is... hegemony. An increase in hegemony that Israel controls within their part of the world. That's what they want.
Well, and now the latest is they want a portion of Lebanon as a buffer state. Isn't that the same thing as an invasion?
Again, they want control over the... And by the way, it is therefore in their interest to increase the amount of instability and chaos in the region. Which is exactly the opposite of what anybody with a bit of sanity that isn't over there wants, including us.
Yeah, certainly not what we want. All right, markets. We've seen the two headliners in the Magnificent Seven, and Microsoft's close to the heart because we actually have several clients that I manage some risk for their Microsoft positions.
Yeah.
For God's sake, it goes down every day. And his Meta... is trading 5.39 this morning. It was 7.50 sake. We're talking.
Well, they just got hammered with a judgment.
Well, it's 128. They were.
Yeah.
Well, they were 6.90, and they were 7.50 earlier last year in September. But
right.
You know, these are big numbers, and NVIDIA is down to 170.
Right.
Well, you know, we're talking about 25 billion shares outstanding. For that thing to go from 200 to 170, what's 30 times 20? Oh, Jesus Christ, it's $750 billion.
It's a hell of a lot of money. Yeah.
And now, granted, it went up, you know, pretty fast and everything, but what are we actually going to be soberingly looking at the stuff these guys are spending and whether or not, you know, they actually are going to come up with earnings and pay you dividends sometime in your lifetime, or are we talking about just hocus pocus here? They're going to buy newspapers and control the world and everything else and not ever make any money.
Well, that's the entire problem, though, Chief, is that this entire, you know, you just had Micron, too, that came out, and the market didn't very much like what it heard there, either.
Oh, what was the story with the Google chips, and then they were going to put their own chips together, and then all these stocks got buried. By the way, so did Google go down. So what's that all
about?
Well,
so here's basically the deal. You've got, yeah, well, and you've got Arm Holdings that is after this now, too. You know, gee, go figure. When you start trying to play monopolist with your pricing, a.k.a. NVIDIA, all right, which has been playing that game now for the last, you know, 10 years, and it goes from gamers to mainstream computing technology companies, because those guys are out there, you know, GPUs, AI, whatever have you, people decide, hey, wait a minute, I'm not paying for that crap. I'm going to come up with my own and screw these guys, right? And because there's enough margin here. You know, this is the old thing. If you make 10%, nobody bothers shooting at you because it's not worth it. If you're making 30, all of a sudden that, you know, the math changes. This is, you're now seeing this. You've now got this, you know, Micron is, well, you know, we don't have enough money. We don't have enough capacity to be actually able to serve, you know, our customers in terms of memory capacity. So we're just going to jack prices until people slow down their buying. The cure for high prices is sometimes high prices.
Oh, yeah.
And, that seems to be happening. So, and Meta, I mean, if you think about it, how does what Meta does?
For those that don't know, Meta is Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook and Instagram.
Yep.
Okay. If you look at the reality of this, and you look at X is another example of this. You know, all these social media sites. If you haven't noticed that essentially the entire platform is now bots, whether controlled by a human or autonomously, that are attempting to siphon off views and get paid through some kind of monetization scheme, whether it's by running ads for garbage or whether, you know, whatever have you, you really aren't paying much attention. This is reaching the point. I mean, Jesus, it's ridiculous, all right? And all of it's crap. And the Iranian thing, what's going on with Iran right now, has put it out in people's faces where it's absolutely unmistakable. Do I like looking at cute kitty pictures? Not pussy, human pussy, pussies,
yes.
Real pussy, you know, purring pussies. Do I like looking at those and some of those? Yeah, some of that stuff's kind of cool. Someone posts their, you know, the 10 best wipeouts that they've seen in the ski hill this week. Yeah, that, you know, okay, yeah, whatever.
I just hope you weren't in one of them.
Well, you know, I wasn't one of the yard sales, but, you know, but some of them are, you know, those are somewhat amusing. So, I mean, there's things like that that are, but how much value is in this? And this has always been my problem with all the social media stuff, is I don't see the value, ultimately.
Do I really care what somebody had for dinner?
Well, and that's, you know, there you are. And yet, all of these sites have designed these algorithms not to inform, not to connect you with other people, but to become an addictive thing that, and as I have said this for years, there's two ways to do it. You either push people's dopamine buttons or you push their adrenaline buttons. One is pleasure, the other one's rage.
Well, yep.
And that's what we've got. This is a serious problem. It's not small.
And they had a couple of court cases. Well, you know what? Let's kick around those court cases on Tuesday, unless something else crazy happens between now and then. We got a dash.
And they're starting to get tagged with some of this now, too, which, and I think that is part of what you're seeing within the market reaction as well.
SP Futures down now 40. NASDAQ is down 204. This is looking uglier and uglier.
This kind of spike up, this is exact. This takes capital out of the market. It burns it. It lights it on fire. And this is exactly the pattern that came in front of the last two big crashes in 2000, 2008.
Well, we also, the thing that is relentless here, and I've said it five times, another 1% increase in this 10-year rate. 10 years now 4.47, up 0.5 today. The 30-year, at this rate, it's going to go through 5 on Monday, and that's going to, what we had a, what a real crummy 7-year auction. Was that yesterday or the day before?
Well, yeah, and Chief, you know what? From a few days ago, the spread between the IRX and the TNX, the low from a few days ago was 5.4. Today, this morning, it's 8.5.
Yeah, it's
That is, oh boy, that's a night.
Are you going to watch your team tonight? Are you into the Tennessee basketball or no?
No.
You're not a basketball dude.
I don't care about this whole. Although I think everyone's brackets getting blown up this year was amusing.
Well, they got out of the first weekend at 3.5 million. There was only 254 left.
Yeah, well, like I said, there were a couple of serious upsets that blew up everybody's love.
Supposedly the biggest bracket buster was the Ohio State game.
Yeah, that was.
That was an 8 versus a 9. I would have thought it would have been the Wisconsin game, but
it depends on who did what, right?
Yep.
It's the way it works, bud.
Well, have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you on Tuesday, unless there's a world crisis before SP Futures. Another world crisis. SP Futures again.
Now, another one?
Yeah. Down 39. NASDAQ Futures on 190. Market will be crazy. We'll talk about that on Monday as well.
That's all, folks.